Hello and welcome. You are listening to Moodily Matters, the podcast that recognizes that your mood matters. Every episode, we talk to a range of amazing guests with experience in some of the top organizations in the world, discussing work life at the crossroads of mood, well-being, and performance. Together, we aim to create better workplaces, one mood at a time. Let's get started with your host, Moodily founder, Erica First.
Hello and welcome. I am Erica First, your host of Moodily Matters. My guest today is presentation expert extraordinaire, Rebecca Leopard. She shares with us the importance of efficient communication and how it's crucial to helping us feel better and achieve more. And now on to the episode.
Okay, so Rebecca, thank you so much for being here with us today on Moodily Matters.
Yeah, it's a pleasure to be here.
Thank you. Why don't we start by you telling us a little bit about who you are and your career journey?
Well, at the moment, I teach women in tech on how to present better, solve problem, be an empathetic leader, and be a bulletproof strategist in their career. But my career journey started as a writer myself. I used to write for magazines. And after a few years, I moved to the darker side of the business. I moved to the marketing and PR industry. And after seeing both sides, I began to have more confidence to say, oh, I should be able to teach communications for both sides, for the journalists on how to communicate better with their corporate partners, you know, and on the other side, also how for public relations to pitch stories to the editors. So that's how I got to be here.
And so you said that you felt like it was important to teach these people. What were you hoping to do in bridging the two?
Well, first and foremost, I see that the way we work across industry and across any roles, in general, I think that the way we work, we always know that, oh, communication is key. Oh, we should be better in communications, but nobody really takes a concrete action towards being better at communications. So that is my greatest joy is when I see people at work really then they don't need to take or to write long emails or to do slides and slides of presentation to, you know, pitch their idea and to get their message across. And at the end of the day, my biggest dream is for us to work shorter hours, you know, because if we communicate efficiently, we will be more productive. The bottom line is going to be very healthy. The corporate culture will be very healthy. And it is kind of, if you think about it, with the technology available today, why are we working harder and longer hours than the generations before us? You know, so that is that is my dream.
Okay, I love that. And actually, that kind of segues into my next question, which is, so communication is what your focus is. How does communication breakdowns create stress or ill will in the workplace?
Well, what we often forget is that when we communicate with humans, there's a lot of baggage that comes with that person, right? And so many layers from the what gender the person is, the culture, the upbringing, the education, the situation, and their own condition of that day. So it's a lot of moving variable factors in the way we communicate. And if we don't empathize, if we don't use empathy, to add on to our intelligence and to add on to our, you know, presentation skill, negotiation skill, we will be losing out. Because, and especially these days, we communicate virtually. So literally, there's a bottom half of our body language that we don't catch. And there's also a lot of distraction as well. There's a lot of noise in that technical term that in the communication channel that will add on to the miscommunications and all that. Plus, again, sometimes technology fail us. We have reminders, we have emails and all that, and balls still get dropped. And people will just be like, but I send them a reminder. They just don't respect me enough and so on. So, you know, there's so many layers. But then one thing that we can always use as a tool is what I said, the empathy, to see that the other person or this group that we're talking to, they probably come from a completely different background. No matter what color, no matter what class, they probably have completely different way of using words. They prefer to use or to think about seniority more than just, you know, just do this and get it done. You know, that won't work with them, for example, or the other way around.
Yeah, that's so interesting what you say, especially about one of the things that you were saying at the beginning, which is that you want to work less. And if we communicate better, things can move faster, which is, I think maybe a lot of us would never consider that what we spend most of our day doing is clearing up miscommunications. So if everyone's communicating more efficiently, then in theory, that should make the process go smoother and allow us to have more time to dedicate to other things or to actually be able to cut the day a little bit shorter.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, well, we know that when we're communicating with someone that we know for a long time, our spouse or best friend, we have shorthands, right? We have either our inside jokes or we have even our own jargon and that sort of thing. And that cut the communication in half. And the way I practice it in my company is that within ourselves, our internal communications, we rarely, if ever, use email. So we use Slack or, you know, any company can use either WhatsApp or Google Chat or whatever, but our company uses Slack. And we just attach everything or tag everything that we need to communicate on that platform, because it's just as a matter, again, a matter of culture whereby if you're writing an email, it's a whole thing, you know. Dear so-and-so, I hope this finds you well, et cetera, et cetera. You know, the whole hospitable pressure. Whereas on a messaging service, they're like, hey, can you take a look at this document? Or, hi, can I borrow you for 5 minutes? And let's huddle quickly on this. And that, you know, that solve problem quickly. And also that reduce a lot of stress. You know, when you receive an email from your boss saying, hey, can we have a chat? And then you're like, oh, what did I do wrong? You know, whereas if it's less of a pressure, you'll just be like, you're more like all ears. Okay, what do you need to say? Or what do I need to approve? What do we need to discuss straight away? And most of the people that work with me in my company, they work 4 hours a day and the company is as productive. The only person that works 8 hours is just because she does have two departments that reports that is under her purview. But the rest, they work 4 hours a day, and that's enough.
And do you find that, because I understand the point of Slack and messaging and that it's more efficient and faster, and that it takes away that having to stress about the politeness, as you say.
Yes.
One of the questions that I do have, though, that I see in current, even in my interactions with different generations and different cultures, is,
yes,
are we getting ruder? Question. Like, yeah. Are we so focused on the objective that we forget to be nice to each other?
Yes. Well, that is, that's why when I said earlier, when we have to empathize with whom we're communicating, I'm from Indonesia. So people in Asia, it's known that for someone who's older, we don't even call them by first name, for example.
Right.
So we don't lose that. We don't necessarily that just immediately forget that there is a certain pleasantry. There is a certain political correctness that we still need to do. However, and I just moved here to England 2 years ago. I do see that no matter what generation, by the way, people in England, when they want to request something, they would tell a story first about how they got into that situation. Then they will ask you the favor, you know, and noticing that, I also have to be able to code switch so that I know that I'm not offending people. So for me, an effective communication doesn't mean that it has to be short. It doesn't mean that it has to be straight to the point always. Effective communications means that the message that you or the result that you want to get is what you get.
Yeah.
So communicating with a child, of course, is different. Again, I have a 9, 6, and 3-year-olds. So communicating with each of them I have to code switch every time. So yeah, of course, communicating with different generation, different cultural background, even when you communicate cross-departmental. So when you communicate with a graphic designer, of course, it's going to be a completely different way of giving them a brief. It's a creative brief, but when you're communicating to your accountant, it's then a completely different coding, right?
Right.
So yeah. So I think the extra layer of communications, you have to then not forget who you're communicating with.
And it's just to add on to what you say there, so I have a background in communication, and I think there's a misunderstanding of what communication actually means, because in the actual literal semantic definition of it, we assume that communication is I said it, therefore I communicated, when actually what communication means is the place where you overlap, where you commune. So what I said to you and what you understood. So it's the actual understanding that is the communication. One is speaking and the other is communicating, and the other person's takeaway or comprehension of what was said is what makes the communication. And I think we forget
absolutely.
This. Because we're just like, I said it, why didn't they get it?
Absolutely. And a lot of people, if not most, you know, except from people like us who are in the communications business or industry, we forget that it's actually hard science.
Yeah.
People that communication is a soft skill, but no matter how you call it, it's as hard science as biology. Because there is a formula to it. The basic formula of communications is source, message, and receiver. So if you're just saying it's source and message, that is how a lot of people describe it. Well, I said it. Well, I sent the email, you know. Well, I gave them the proposal. It's not my fault that I didn't book the sales, you know. So yeah, people keep forgetting the receiver part of the communications. It's the whole point. It's almost like when you're on, you know, Zoom call and you're talking and talking, and then you don't realize you're on mute, right?
I'm sure we've all been there. So I'm going to segue into your skill, which you're bringing us today, which is presentation skills, correct?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
So why don't you take it away and tell us about, you know, we've already talked about how improving communication and your process of communication can not only make you a more effective employee, leader, manager, but it can also, you know, make you less stressed because there's less miscommunications, there's less misunderstandings, there's less having to redo things because people are getting it the first time. So how do presentation skills contribute to our well-being in the office or out of the office?
Okay. I'm going to start with a little story, a factual story that PPT, PowerPoint presentation, that was not original Microsoft product. So Bill Gates bought that, acquired that company, the startup company, within 3 months after its launch. So the genius Bill Gates knew that our life is just our corporate or our business life will be almost governed by the way we present. So this is how important it is, no matter what department you are, no matter where you are in the career ladder. You could be an intern, you can be a CEO. At some point, you will have to present. Now, the next thing that I would like to iterate is that a presentation is an event or an act where you are trying to compel your audience to get and you get a buy-in into your idea. So the definition of a presentation is not the slide. It's not the meeting, you know, and it's not also it's not a lecture, you know, where you're, yes, of course, your professor would give you the lecture via slides, via their teaching slide, but that is not a presentation. So if we know what presentation is not, and that the fact that presentation itself is just the act of trying to convince your audience to then get a buy-in into your idea. Now you think that, oh, actually, with or without the actual slide, one should be able to present. Because what actually happened before PowerPoint presentation was invented? What happened before, you know, the slide projector was invented? Presentation already happened since, you know, since humans socialize. So what I normally teach is that you only need not more than 10 slides, actually. And in my classroom, I normally break it down. Okay, this is first, second, all the way to 10th slide. This is you. This is what you need. And you don't need any more than this. Not only that, you're going to, you know, bore your audience, and B, you want the follow-up of your presentation. You want the actual action to happen after your you know, act of convincing and compelling your audience. That is more important than only just, you know, giving away your ideas. Now, the presentation also not about exuberance, not about being an extrovert, not about having a stage presence, you know, now these days, because as we know, the world is almost like it's built for extroverts and tall people. I'm short, so I know that, you know, you have to have a massive stage presence to be heard. But actually, if you know how to structure your sentence to actually then express your idea or your thesis, or the solution that you're trying to sell to your audience. And that audience can be your spouse, can be your boss, can be your client or your potential client. And then the rest of your presentation is just evidence and data that supports your claim or your idea. And that's it. So it doesn't have to be long story about who you are, or like, you know, in, it doesn't have to be the copy paste of your website where you have the homepage and then about us and we are so and so. Because at the end of the day, your audience is taking the time of their day to sit in front of you and to listen to you. And they also want to be appreciated for their time, their intelligence. And they just want to get, okay, what are you trying to tell me? And I will decide by the end of this presentation, yes or no. So help them to say yes. So when you're drafting your presentation, write it down, already thinking, what critical questions would they likely to ask once you say what your idea is? So preempt those questions and put it as already your statement, and back up your statement with data. And that data doesn't have to be a copy paste of your Excel sheet. Just choose one that is, you know, like 7 out of 10 people choose blah, blah, blah. You know, you don't have to then extract all of the nitty-gritty. And also, if you don't have, you know, data, you don't have stats, for example, you can also use anecdotes. You can use testimonials. You can use a story of similar situation and how that solution have helped them. And you can also then use either news clipping or a case study from an adjacent industry or an adjacent area.
So let me ask you a question, because I when I was going through my whole startup process, everybody said the 10 slide, which, you know, my first deck was literally 135. So it seemed like a miracle. But one of the things that you say, which is obviously correct, is to try and preempt the questions that they're going to have. How do you do this? Like, how can you know what questions or objections people are going to have in their mind? Do they tend to fall in similar areas? You know, how can we imagine what other people have in their minds that they're not interested in?
Oh, here's, well, this is the a repeating pattern. Again, empathy. So what I normally teach my learners, my students, is, okay, so now you already know what you're going to present, what about, okay, and put your foot in their shoes. And what is that if not empathy? So I would draw a map, an empathy map. So you must know who's going to attend that presentation, right? And you also need to map within, let's say it's a group of people, you map it out. Who is the decision maker? And sometimes it doesn't mean that the most senior one in the room is the decision maker. As we know, there's some certain dynamics that we would say the whisperer, you know, maybe the number two is the whisperer to the decision maker, the official decision maker, the one who signs the check. So the more we know who's in the room, the better chance we have. And because of social media, because of you know, LinkedIn and all, a lot of people have their own even personal website, we can literally kind of stalk them before the presentation.
I didn't want to say it, so I'm glad you did. So let's say do your research.
Yes. So do your research. And again, you know, I grew up in the library era, not the Google era. So back then, when we had to do research, it was it was really, really tough. And definitely I couldn't just follow them around and see what's their hobby and whatnot. So map who the audience and the dynamic of that group, plus map their pain and gain. You know, for example, if they are a local politician that and you want some policy to be made and so on. And you can check, oh, are they up for a re-election? You know? So if they are, your empathy will show what's the pain? Well, the pain is if they don't get reelected, right? And the gain is, of course, if they get more vote. So how can your idea to, for example, get a new stop sign in every school area help them to get the vote? Then the preempt, so because here's the thing, they probably won't ask the question, but they have it in their mind, like, how are this going to help me win the next election, right? That's always going to be in their mind. So then your data will be like, parents are excited voters. Like, they always turn up at the poll station. So if you are on the good side of the parents, you're actually going to have a good chance of winning the election. Therefore, it's not a bad idea to put, you know, more safety measures around the school district. You see what I'm going here?
Like, yeah.
The way, yep.
No, so just a question, because like in those cases, it's, and I think the underlying theme is that when you write a presentation, you don't write it for mm-hmm. what you want to say, but you write it for, here's what you receive or get out of it. And here's why I'm going to do this for your life. So in the case of like politicians, I think their objectives are a little bit easier. Yeah. How would we translate this into a more corporate setting, let's say, where you just have, maybe you need to ask for more money or a budget, or maybe you're trying to sell a campaign. How can we do it on a less obvious what's in it for them situation?
Oh my goodness. I honestly think in the capitalism world, it is more obvious. It's about the bottom line, isn't it? Right? Mm. It's always going to be about the bottom line. So with a bit more nuance, for example, if your company is going through a merger and acquisition, then probably your, you know, the quote unquote, what's in it for them is that how are we going to use my idea to smoothen the transition process? Therefore, you as the new co-CEO, let's say, will be seen as a very good co-CEO of a company that's just been through a merger and acquisition, because that is a very tough thing for us. A CEO is always, you know, is always marked by the way they overcome difficulties in the journey of their company. Either they just got a new funding or they just got acquired, etc. Or as simple as if you want to talk to your finance director and your job is actually, you need a new machine, let's say, and you want to make a case for it, then literally for the finance director, what do they care about? They care about, okay, how long is this going to last? How this is going to hurt the current books, and how this is going to be seen by the, you know, the power that be. So basically what we need to do for this audience is, hey, listen, I'm not going to make your life difficult. First of all, that is the notion, but this company needs this new machinery. I know that it's a lot of investment, and this is how it's not going to hurt the company, because with this machinery, actually, this can be used by this budget. So again, doing the research really, really helped, because again, when you're talking to a finance person, then what they care about is like, okay, P&L, profit and loss. If we just had a loss last month, how are we going to fund this, and so on? Or if you're talking to, as you said, if you want to make a case for another cost, or if you want to increase a budget, then again, it's even easier to show your homework that, okay, this is what I need to achieve this bit. And my suggestion is also go also with a plan B. Like, I know that any forecast is never, it's forecast is a forecast. You know, even the rain sometimes doesn't happen. But if we miss this forecast, this is my plan B. And it's not even about the actual plan B. The fact that you told them that you have a plan B, that is compelling enough for them to, whoa, this girl really thought about everything. And therefore, I'm going to trust her.
Okay, that's awesome. I've just been taking notes here, so I'll go through them in one second. But I want to ask one more question, because you mentioned that you don't have to be a charismatic extrovert to deliver mm-hmm. a good presentation. But let's talk about mindset or mood set that you should be in when giving a presentation.
Yeah. Well, the one thing that is not negotiable is being professional. Okay. So, of course, it doesn't mean that you're just going to be showing up at your bare minimum, you know, just get out of bed outfit. That's, you know, I don't think I have to break it down what professionalism means, but being there on time, the fact that you are there before they arrive, that you don't have to, that you already know how the clicker works for the slide, you know, because if you are already an introvert and you're nervous with, oh my God, how these things work, then you already lose them. Okay. And if you are not, an actual naturally funny person, do not attempt a joke. I know that everyone's like, start with a joke, break the ice. But if it's not natural for you, don't do it, because it's more risky.
Awkward.
Yeah. So, yeah. And yes, a lot of people would advise eye contact. But again, technically, now that we are in the Zoom era, you know, it's very hard to maintain eye contact, because even if you're looking into the camera, your audience is maybe looking at, your audience is not looking into the camera as well. Right. And if you're both looking into the camera, nobody's actually looking at anything.
Yeah. Well,
you know what I mean?
Usually we're looking at ourselves, the reflection of ourselves. So.
Yeah. But definitely don't then get tempted to fix your hair, you know, think about how your mascara is on fleek today or not. So sometimes being an extrovert can also backfire in this case, you know, because again, when you're in a virtual meeting, it's very, very hard to take a temperature of the room, so to speak, right? And if you're an extrovert, you need the energy of the room to actually energize you and to give you feedback. Are people laughing? You know, so many comedians that I've listened to their interview during the pandemic, they always say, it's so confusing for me to perform because I don't know whether people are laughing or not.
Right.
And yeah, so now we almost like leveling the playing field where whether or not you're an extrovert, whether or not you're loud, it's not going to make any difference. At the end of the day, it's the quality of your content.
Okay, this is so awesome. I'm just going to summarize, if that's cool, what you've said, and tell me if I've said anything or I've captured it incorrectly. So the first is that you, when you're putting together a presentation, you want to make sure you know what you want as the outcome of the presentation, whether it's more money, whether it's a follow-up phone call, whether it's a second meeting. You have to know what it is mm-hmm. that you're trying to get going into the mm-hmm. room. So that's how you know if the mm-hmm. meeting is successful or not. And when you do this, you yeah. want to make a statement that mm-hmm. could inevitably lead to that objective. We make the statement of what it is that you're offering, what it is that you're there to do, the problem that you're solving, and you're mm-hmm. going to back it up with data. And if you don't have hard data, like yep. if you're just starting and you don't have any users, or if you're rolling out, you know,
yep.
want to use a new photographer and you don't have any like numbers around it, anecdotes, testimonials,
yep.
News clippings, or relative same activity in the field.
Yep.
You want to write with your audience in mind. And so therefore do your research about who's going to be in the room and what their pain points mm-hmm. are and what ultimately their bottom line is, what they can take away as, you know, yes. looking at this presentation, what's in it for me, which is ultimately the question that all of us look at when we look at a presentation. Remember that you are solving a problem, not creating one. So show, yeah. show how what you're doing actually improves their lives instead of making more hassles. Or if it does make more hassles, how it ultimately ladders up to a benefit for them. Yep. Have backup options and show that you've thought the problem through. So that they know that they can, that builds trust, but also creates or takes away some of the risk for them to say yes.
Yes.
And then to show
make it easy for them to say yes.
Right. Make it easy to say yes. And then of course, show up professionally. You don't have to be, an entertainer, especially on Zoom, because it's pretty objective based communications. Be on time. Have done a tech run through. Make sure you're comfortable in the space that you're going to be presenting in. Mm-hmm. Be yourself, not an entertainer. So if you are an introvert, be comfortable with that. If you are an extrovert, don't try and overdo it.
Yeah.
appropriate eye contact where applicable. And also, if you are an extrovert, to learn to operate in a vacuum of feedback. So what it means to present without, you know, if you're like trying to crack a joke and everyone's on mute or whatever, that doesn't psych you out mentally, because ultimately at the end of the day, it all comes out to the quality of content, which are those points that we just mm-hmm. talked about. Have I done a good job summarizing?
Oh my God. You can now facilitate my class. I can retire now.
So Rebecca, before I let you go, where can mm-hmm. people find you and learn more about your work?
Yes, it's easy. You either go to RebeccaLeppard.com or you go straight into my company website, upgradingwomen.com.
Okay, awesome. And all the links to her websites and contact will be in the podcast notes under this. Thank you, Rebecca, so much for joining. That was incredible. Like I said, I'd wish I'd met you when I was going through this process so many years ago. I'm sure that everyone listening has definitely gotten some amazing takeaways for that they can apply in their own lives.
Fantastic. Thank you for having me.
Thanks so much for tuning in to this episode of Moodly Matters. If you're enjoying the show, please feel free to rate, subscribe, and leave a review wherever you listen to your podcasts. We really appreciate that effort, and we'll catch you in the next episode of Moodly Matters.